Hello and welcome back. This is Alice Green, your host and coach of the Food Freedom Workshop. Last week when we were together, I talked about the first C of food freedom, being conscious without judgment, and how to become aware of your hunger levels, which you've now had some time to spend experimenting with that and getting some insights from what you've observed. Today, I'm going to talk about the second C, where you're going to get greater clarity about what it is that's driving your behaviors and choices to keep eating even though you've become full, or eat when you aren't hungry, or skip eating when you are hungry, or to make unhealthy choices that don't feel that good to you. I'll start off with the 8 reasons for overeating that I briefly mentioned last week. And actually, these 8 reasons are for any of these times. It's not just overeating. It can be for times when you eat when you aren't hungry or make unhealthy choices. But last week when I referenced it, was specifically tied to reasons for overeating. And this is depicted on page 1 of this week's workbook. These 8 reasons come from the work that I've done with clients, and they'll give you a place of reference to understand what you're doing when you find yourself eating past the point of satisfaction or eating for reasons other than physical hunger. The first reason for overeating, or again, eating for other reasons, and the most obvious, is mindless excess, the top green circle, where you're not paying any attention and you're not being fully aware of what it is you're putting in your mouth. And as you know for yourself, boy, this can easily happen when you're watching TV, or being on the computer, eating while you're driving, or eating out with other people. It also typically happens when you're grazing or just popping things into your mouth without realizing that you're doing it. In addition, when you eat compulsively, you're seldom aware of the food that you're eating, nor do you taste it. Now, if you aren't aware of your behaviors as you're doing them, as I mentioned last week, you can't change them. You have no way to be in control or to make different choices. You're effectively on autopilot and letting your subconscious drive your actions. So the answer to this is being conscious of what you're eating, what your hunger levels are, when you want to stop and check in with yourself, and of how you're feeling physically and emotionally. The second reason is eating just carbohydrates. So we're going clockwise in this graphic. And especially simple carbohydrates, and not balancing that enough with protein or fat, like having just pretzels or crackers or pastries. And actually many cereals are predominantly carbohydrates and not well balanced by protein or fat. And what happens is they digest very quickly, and you won't realize how full you're getting until you get too full. And because of the speed in which carbohydrates digest, they flood your bloodstream with glucose, which the body counters with that surge in insulin, which can in turn drop your blood sugar so fast and too low that it drives you to eat even more food and simultaneously sends a signal to your adrenal glands to release even more of another hormone, cortisol. And when cortisol levels go up in your bloodstream, they stimulate your appetite and cravings for even more carbohydrates. So it's a vicious cycle. And then, you know, add to that, even if you have overeaten, you're probably going to feel hungry within just a couple of hours because of how fast carbohydrates digest, leaving you with an empty stomach. So you end up eating more food than you need during the day. And at night, this is particularly problematic because that's when your metabolism is slowing down. The way to address this is to balance your meals and snacks, so that you have enough protein and fat to offset those carbohydrates and slow down your digestion. And we're going to talk more about that in our next class. The third reason is what I call ravenous gotcha. Now, if you're famished and extremely hungry when you finally get a chance to eat, you are going to be physiologically and psychologically driven to eat as much as you can, as fast as you can, and you'll inevitably overeat and make poor choices. And no doubt you've experienced this for yourself. In fact, I often see in discovery journals that when there's a zero on the hunger scale, it's often paired with a nine. And that doesn't surprise me. When you're extremely hungry, you are going to overeat by going for lots of quick and easy foods. You're going to find yourself snacking food right before dinner and then eating your meal. Even as you're starting to feel full, it's almost like you can't stop. And you'll avoid making a meal potentially at all because you don't have the energy when you're ravenous and simply snacking. And then opting for lots of carbohydrates. And what's interesting about that, and there's a reason why we tend to want a lot of carbohydrates and why that bread basket is always so appealing when you go out to eat and you're so hungry, is that when you are that hungry, your body wants to get fuel as quickly as it can get it. And simple carbohydrates provides that. And back to simple carbohydrates, before you know it, you've unconsciously overeaten. So the key is to be sure you get enough food throughout the day and you don't go for long hours without getting food. Paying attention to your hunger levels and planning ahead so that you have food when you get hungry is what will help you to do that. And not only does that help you avoid overeating, but it helps you to avoid the dips in your metabolism and blood sugar levels. Now, these first three reasons can be dealt with by being conscious when you eat, what we've been working on, I talked about last week, and by being aware of your hunger levels and honoring them, as well as balancing your foods. The remaining five, which are shown now in yellow, are driven by your subconscious thoughts and emotions, and these are much tougher to identify and to resolve. Yet, the way I've classified them here, I think it's going to give you a starting point to begin recognizing what might be going on for you when you struggle to stop eating, eat when you aren't hungry, or make unhealthy or unbalanced food choices. So, let me start off with the first one of these. And again, continuing to go clockwise around this circle. And so, what we're looking at here is food associations. When we have repeatedly similar experiences with food, or when food is inextricably linked to certain events, we can create associations between foods or between foods and specific scenarios, like having cake on a birthday. So it's a birthday. A birthday always has cake. Milk with cookies. Many of us grew up with that. Bringing donuts to work in the morning. Having dessert after dinner or a snack before dinner. One goes with the other automatically. You don't think about it. You just do it. You don't question if it's an option or a choice. You subconsciously just pair them together, whether you really want that food or are already full or it would be in your best interest to do something differently. Again, you just do it. You don't question it. You don't think about it. So to break the associations, you have to see the patterns. And then you have to start new patterns, such as bringing a healthy morning snack to work instead of donuts, or not snacking before dinner. And in that case, it wouldn't mean that you would never have a pre-dinner snack. It doesn't mean that you would never have a donut. But it stops the automatic habitual pattern, and it gives you choices, and it gives you control over what you eat and when you eat it. The fifth one is perceived pressure. Whenever someone encourages us to eat something, or when we feel we should eat because of what others are doing around us, that's perceived pressure. It's our own perception that we're being pressured to eat. Even if it feels like you are being pressured, it's still your perception of that. And the truth is, no one can make us eat. And very often the person who's encouraging you or asking if you want more or to try a particular food doesn't really care if you have it or not. They may be just trying to get the food out of their house. They may want company when they overindulge. Maybe they're being polite or just making sure you got enough to eat. And, you know, maybe they don't know themselves. Just like we're looking at this wheel of what drives us and our behaviors, they've got the same thing going on, so we don't necessarily know what's driving them. And you can very politely decline or reassure them that you don't need anything. Thanks, I'm all set, I'm good. And that ends the discussion. Now, of course, sometimes they do care and they are pressuring you. But you, again, you don't have to eat to make them feel better or to take care of their feelings. You can very nicely decline or offer to take food home or have it later, and then you decide when you take it home what you're going to do with it. Maybe at that point you do want it, but at least it's on your terms. Now, the toughest situation for this is at someone's dinner party, where you don't want the host to think you aren't enjoying their food. I mean, this is a trickier situation. So in that case, you can specifically ask for smaller portions, and you can do it in a playful way. You can sort of playfully warn them, you know, you're not going to be able to finish it all if the portions are too big. You can ask how many courses there'll be so that you can pace yourself. I remember working with a client who had no idea that she was about to face a 6-course meal, and she thought she was pacing herself. You know, she had the salad and the appetizer and what she thought was the entree before the dessert, and then there was another kind of mini entree, and then there were sort of two desserts, a cheese plate and something with chocolate, I think it was. She didn't see it coming, and so she felt that she had to keep eating, and she left sick. So honestly, what you want to do is you want to be able to get a sense of what are you dealing with. And you can be honest when you're starting to get full and say, you know, at this point, I have to just have a little taste of the next course. This has been so good, but, oh my gosh, I couldn't possibly eat it anymore. I'm going to burst. But I hope you'll let me take some home so I can fully enjoy it tomorrow. Or whatever you think would be the best thing to say so that you, too, don't go home sick if you can avoid it. Who wants that? You want to leave a party feeling good. And the hostess would never want you to feel disgusting after her party. So try to figure out, and again, it takes some experimentation, what will work for you. And, it, of course, it depends on the host, but you can experiment with that. Moving on, the sixth reason is unconscious beliefs. The most common unconscious beliefs are going to be the ones that we got from our childhood, such as you have to eat everything on your plate, which many people over 40 grew up with that one, and it was beaten into our heads. Sometimes it felt literally, not just figuratively. Or you shouldn't waste food. Kids are starving in Africa. Or you deserve a treat after doing something hard. You know, we came home from school, hard day, not at the office, hard day at school, and you got a treat, and that translates as we get older to hard day at the office. As well as you need something sweet after dinner. That becomes an unconscious belief. You pair those together. It's almost like a food association. Well, in fact, food associations are unconscious beliefs. And these may seem pretty obvious. You might say, oh, yeah, I recognize that, that I have that. And you would think because it's obvious that you would see that. But honestly, the way they drive your behavior is not always so obvious or conscious. Now, our beliefs come from so many sources. It's not just coming from our parents. They come from the different diets that we've done, the media, the magazines that you've just read, the latest research, the latest news on what food is good or bad, our doctors, friends, fitness experts, you name it. And that is why we all carry different beliefs, and why it can be hard to recognize and pin them down as drivers of your behavior with food, especially when several of them can be driving you at once. And I want to give you an example of that, and then this comes from a former client of mine, Tiffany. She's Italian and loves to hold dinner parties. She loves to cook, and this is something that she always looks forward to, but she hated what she did afterwards. This is hard to imagine, and it was very hard for her to really talk about. But she would eat all the remaining food that wasn't eaten after a guest left to the point of being physically sick. And she had no idea why she did this until we spent time and really uncovered her beliefs, which were, one, she shouldn't waste food, and two, keeping leftovers so smelly and disgusting. Well, that put her into a catch-22. She really had no options. These combined together really left her no option at all but to eat the remaining food after her guests had gone home. So what she realized as we worked that through was that these beliefs were deeply instilled in her by her mom, and having grown up in a big family that ate heaping portions in seconds, there, you know, growing up under those circumstances, there wasn't food remaining at the end of the meal. It wasn't an issue. But it is when you're holding a dinner party. And once she recognized what was driving her behavior and that this didn't make any sense for her lifestyle, she was able to change her beliefs. As we start to delve into specific situations when you didn't feel in control, we're going to start to uncover hidden beliefs that you have and then be able to determine what would be better beliefs that you can consciously begin to use to change your behavior. And sometimes you can do that through affirmations, sort of repeating to yourself that, you know, this is your new belief, or it's just in the act of making changes and starting to do them, like leaving food on your plate when you've spent your entire life eating everything on your plate, and that starts to change your behavior. And the more you do that, the more you'll subconsciously revise your beliefs and your behaviors will follow. The seventh reason is restricted rebellion. When you feel restricted, either of your own doing or because of what you're being told you can't or can't have, part of you rebels against that restriction. It's sort of like a child. You know, think of a child who's being told they can't do something or can't have something, and what happens? They want it all the more. Well, as adults, we're still doing that, but we are seldom aware that we're doing that. And one of the reasons is we tend to believe that all we need is willpower to force ourselves to be good. But honestly, at some point, you lose the energy to maintain that willpower. It takes a lot of energy to maintain that willpower, and your inner rebel will begin to take over and act out. And that inner rebel or inner child represents your emotions and your desires and your unmet needs. And here's what's very interesting. Your emotions are much stronger than your beliefs and your rational mind. It doesn't matter how determined you are or how smart you are. Once your emotions get the upper hand, they take over. And once they take over, you won't be able to stop yourself or improve your behavior. And it's that little voice probably you can recognize that says, that rebel voice that says, I don't care, I shouldn't be doing this, or your belief system is saying you can't have that, and that little rebel voice is saying, I'm eating it anyway, as you devour the bag of chips or box of donuts or rest of the cake or cookies, even as that other part of you is saying you shouldn't be eating this. Your emotional inner child, frankly, doesn't care. And what's happening here is an internal battle between your inner enforcer of your beliefs and your inner child who holds your emotions and needs and wants. And the more that enforcer tightens the reins and demands compliance, the more the child has a tantrum or goes on a binge. The way to calm these two down, particularly the child, because that's what you're seeing act out, but actually they're both enraged, really. The way to calm the child down is to relax the rules and work on changing the beliefs, but not so much that the enforcer is uncomfortable or feels that the child will be allowed to get totally out of control. You know, both sides, there needs to be structure and there needs to be an understanding, sort of a renegotiated sort of structure between the two, much like having food in the house that isn't healthy without any limits or strategies. That would be hard for both sides. And I'm going to talk more about these inner parts in the weeks ahead, but it gives you a little bit of a taste and the understanding of why this is so difficult. And now we're at the last and eighth reason, which is emotional repression. And emotional repression is actually more classic emotional eating. This is turning to food to numb, avoid, or reject feelings that you just don't, you know, think you have time for or energy to address. And no doubt you've heard the phrase, it isn't what you're eating, but what's eating you that matters. And you know, that's true for emotional eating. And the more you eat to cope with life, the more you stuff your feelings down in your subconscious, and the more power they have to drive you to overeat. And again, I am going to spend more time on this in a future class. So for this week, what I encourage you to do is to keep using your discovery journal and tracking where your hunger levels are, both when you start and stop eating, and also continue noticing when it is that you start to become full as you eat. That's still probably something that's giving you a lot of insight. And in addition, now that you have a better understanding of what might be driving you to eat when you aren't hungry or when you're already starting to get full, you can also start to add some notes in one of the next two columns, either what you might be thinking or feeling, or what insights you might be getting. And there's also a place in your workbook now where you can write down observations and insights for specific types of situations that you see happening frequently on pages 8 and 9. So that's a place where you can start to put down your strategies, and a place that you can refer back to when you find yourself in one of those situations again, which is inevitable. So this concludes our second class. Thank you for joining me today. We will meet again next week. And in the meantime, I look forward to having you on our coaching call. Have a conscious, compassionate, and curious week. Talk to you soon.